Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Come here, Miss Keene.
Oh, thank you. An advertisement. Another advertisement. The light bill. Oh, how stimulating.
You just heard from your sister a few days ago, didn't you?
3 weeks. 3 weeks and 2 days to be exact, Margaret.
Has it been that long?
Yes, it has. Nobody cares whether I live or die.
Oh, sure they do, Miss Keene.
You don't understand. You don't know what it's like to be alone. Hello?
Hello?
Who is this?
Hello?
Who is calling?
Hello?
Please, who is calling?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
About
Ryan, my fiancé. He died the week before we were to be married. We were in a car together. I insisted upon driving. I was always insisting upon everything, determined to have my own way. Dominating him. He always did what I said. Always. I lost control of the car. I drove straight into a tree. Brown went right through the windshield. Cut to pieces.
Somebody wants you. Somebody.
somebody's me.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Welcome, everybody, Tales from the Crypt. And here's your...
I'm the Crypt Keepers. I love that show. Yes, good afternoon, everybody. We are the Crypt Keepers, and we are here with another episode of Talking Twilight Zone. I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
I think someone's calling you from beyond, Lynn.
Somebody's calling me?
Be careful. Hello?
Hello there. Oh, God. I do hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I did, and although the weather was very, very, very cold and still is, it was still a very nice day. And, by the way, Robert, how is it there? Is it cold? Cold in Ohio?
Yeah, I think it's been 40 degrees, 40, 45 today, so we had a little breeze going on, but...
And it's about 35 here. And, Rick, I know you get about the same that we do, sometimes even worse, right?
It was about 37, 38 today. It's going to be 50 tomorrow. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope ours goes to 50. I don't know if it is. Felix is in New Jersey, so I know he's cold.
Oh, I wanted to ask. That was Black Friday. Did everybody go shopping or
no,
stayed away?
I haven't gone out on Black Friday in probably about 20 years. No, I do most of my shopping online. I don't deal with that Black Friday crap. Bobby was watching it on the news yesterday, how insane people are. He was telling me how bad they were. Out of the lines. I mean, it's such so insane. I mean, the lines, you know, outside of places, people knocking other people over just to take $10 on something, you know. It's outrageous.
Well, things are really discounted. I mean, you can get some good deals out there if you really go out there and look. So that's what I do. I do every year. I go out there just for the...
You do? You go out on Black Friday, really?
Yep. Me and my wife
don't have to do that. On the news last night, a website that is dedicated to finding bargains did some research and found that the things that were selling yesterday at a discount were selling for the same price on September the 6th.
I seen that one, yeah. Interesting, to say the least.
People are just so insane. They really are. And Felix says he hates all the congested roads around this time of year. I know. I mean, the crazy drivers speeding the mall. You're right. The mall. Oh, they said the parking at the malls was insane. No, I just can't do it. Years ago, I would go out on Black Friday, but then I stopped. It just got so crazy. I do my shopping online. No crowds, no parking. No, and you still get deals because all the websites are sending me emails about their Black Friday deals, you know. So I say, excuse me, save myself the aggravation.
And how are you doing? I heard you weren't doing very well. Are you feeling better now?
Well, as you can see, I'm still getting over a little bit. So I have a little bit of a cough. But, I just had a call. I just really wasn't up to doing the show last week because it just felt crappy. You know, I just felt really crappy. But now I'm much better. Except for a little cough that's left. So anyway, today, thank you for asking. Today we are doing an episode called Night Call.
I ask you before we go to the clip here, what is involved with this episode? Because wasn't this moved for a reason?
Moved? What do you mean moved?
Wasn't this supposed to originally air during the Kennedy assassination? And
that was due to air on Friday, November 22nd.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and they moved it. Because
took it off and moved it up later.
Yeah, because the TV, all the coverage was on Kennedy. So they had to move it because all the stations were dedicated to that. So that was the story with that.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Miss Elva Keene lives alone on the outskirts of London Flats, a tiny rural community in Maine. Up until now, the pattern of Miss Keene's existence has been that of lying in her bed or sitting in her wheelchair, reading books, listening to a radio, eating, napping, taking medication, and waiting for something different to happen. Miss Keene doesn't know it yet, but her period of waiting has just ended. For something different is about to happen to her, has in fact already begun to happen, via two most unaccountable telephone calls in the middle of a stormy night. Telephone calls routed directly through the Twilight Zone.
But, yeah, one of the better episodes, I think, of season five. One of the creepier episodes of the whole series. And it revolves around an elderly, disabled woman named Elva Keene. And she begins receiving these strange, disturbing, anonymous calls in the middle of a dark and stormy night. It was a perfect setting for this episode. And during the first calls that she gets, all she hears is static, which, you know, not so disturbing, but, you know, she was figured there was a problem with her phone line. And then later, she gets more calls, and all she hears is a man moaning on the other end. Just, yeah, it was very, very disturbing. So she keeps demanding to know who's calling, but all she gets is the moaning. So finally she gets calls, and all she's hearing is, hello, hello, and you just keep saying hello over and over and over again. And then on the last call that she gets, she's asking who it is, and the voice says, hello, where are you? I want to talk to you. Well, she's terrified. Scares the crap out of her. And she screams in the phone, leave me alone! Leave me alone! And she's just, you know, totally horrified. So she hangs up the phone. The phone company, she's been bugging them to find out where they're coming from. They finally trace the calls. And they said there's no possible way that someone could have called her from the location where they traced the call. The calls are coming from a fallen telephone line that's fallen in a cemetery. So Elva and her very patient and devoted housekeeper visit the cemetery, and she finds that the phone line is resting on the grave of her long deceased fiance, Brian Douglas. Elva says that she always insisted on having her own way. Brian always did what she said, and a week before they were to be married, she insisted on driving, lost control of the car, drove into a tree. Brian was killed when he went through the windshield, and she was crippled for life. But now she's thrilled because she can finally talk to him again. She can finally talk to her long-lost love, and she won't be alone anymore. So she goes home that night, and she's laying in bed, and she's anxiously waiting for the phone to ring, and it rings, and she calls out, Brian? 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 And she's pleading with him to answer her. And he replies, you told me to leave you alone. I always do what you say.
I'm like Goosey doing that. I wanted to drink your blood.
I always do what you say. And he hangs up the phone. Well, actually, he doesn't hang up the phone, but the phone line goes dead. And she starts screaming into the phone, Brian, Brian, I didn't know it was you. Brian, come back. And she starts sobbing. And all of a sudden, she's alone again. And you just see her alone and crying in bed.
I guess it's back to talking to Ben Franklin again.
That's right.
Oh, how boring.
She's lost her Brian again. Well, I'm sure that many of us, or some of us, would love nothing more than to speak to your departed friends and family just one more time. And then I suppose some of us would not be too thrilled with the thought of that. You know, wouldn't appeal to us to speak to someone from the dead. But in this episode, you've got a woman, she's lonely, she's crippled, and she gets the very chance to connect or communicate with her long departed love, her fiance. But she blows it big time. But that's not her fault. It is not her fault. I mean, she keeps getting these phone calls, you know, in the middle of the night, and they're creepy and they're spooky and the voice is really disturbing. And it's coming through the other end of the line. And she's alone. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know if this is some killer that's out to get her. And if only the voice had said who he was right from the start, poor Elva wouldn't have been freaking out so much. But we know that if he'd done that, that would be the end of the episode, and we wouldn't have this amazingly eerie episode. But it's that dreadful moaning. That's what really makes your hair stand on end. And that mournful voice, you know, droning the words, "Where are you? I want to talk to you." That would be frightening to anyone, especially a lonely old woman who's crippled and living by herself. I mean, I'd be scared if you don't know who it is. But,
it seems like Bill Mooney didn't have no problems when he was talking to his dead grandmother on his toy phone.
That's true. But she probably didn't sound that bad.
And he thought it was a game.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He thought it was a game. He thought Grandma was really around. But this episode always gave me goosebumps. I mean, the phone call straight to the cemetery. And, you know, you don't really – I didn't find this to be a predictable – the very first time I saw this episode many, many years ago, I didn't find it to be predictable at all. I had no idea where the phone calls were coming from. And then when they said the cemetery, you didn't know anything about her fiancé until she got to the cemetery. So it was all a surprise to me. And, you know, when she got there and they showed, you know, pan over to the phone line on the grave, and then she tells the story, and I was getting, you know, goosebumps. And it just, I thought it was very heartbreaking to see her, you know, crying like that at the end, because, you know, she's begging him to forgive her. She tries to explain. She didn't know it was him, but he wasn't really into reasoning. You know, I guess dead people aren't into reasoning with the living. So it was heartbreaking to see her devastated and sobbing. You know, and I always think about Henry Bemis at the end of Time Enough at Last, where he's saying, "That's not fair. That's not fair at all." You know, and most people, especially an old woman like that, they would have been scared beyond words. He didn't identify. So no, it's not fair at all. It's not fair at all. And I always get tears in my eyes at the end of this one, you know, just like I do at the end of Time Enough at Last. You know, we have, and here is another episode where we have this awesome performance by the late, great Gladys Cooper. I just think she's phenomenal. I love that woman. That woman can just make you feel anything that she's trying to convey. You know, you feel her fear, her desperation. And she did the exact same thing when she was in that episode, Nothing in the Dark, with Robert Redford. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was an old woman who was, the poor woman was always being haunted by death in some way, but she was scared of Mr. Death coming to get her. So she stayed alone in her little, you know, little, I guess, apartment, you would call it, her basement apartment. And she never went outside. And you felt for her. I mean, everything she conveys, you feel, because she's that good of an actress. She was really wonderful.
And yeah, but in that episode, she was conveying what incident that happened that caused her to be in that situation. And
yeah.
I guess towards the end of this one, you do with the info dump where she is explaining about Brian, but I feel that one is a far better episode than what this one was. So,
well, I like that one too. I mean, I like Nothing in the Dark. I thought she was wonderful in that. And you did. You felt her fear. You really felt her fear and her desperation. But I thought in this one, I felt the same way in this one where, you know, you really felt, you know, her terror. And I felt so sorry for her at the end. I really did. I mean, she screamed at him, but she screamed at him. She thought he was some kind of a nut on the other end of the phone. And this episode, it was written by Richard Matheson, one of his better stories, one of his winners, I think, and it was based on his 1953 short story, Sorry, Right Number. And I thought the scariest parts were when the calls came in at night. It loses a little bit of the ominous effect when one of the calls comes during the day. But I especially love the scene that shows the phone wire hanging across the headstone. And Nora Marlowe played Elva's very supportive and patient housekeeper, Margaret Phillips. She did a wonderful job, too. But I thought Elva deserved better than to be hung up on by Brian. You know, I kept wondering how he could do that to her. He didn't. Maybe the dead don't realize they're dead, you know.
Maybe they're too literal.
That's true, too.
You find a genie, you tell the genie you want $1 million, and he gives you $1 million deer. So.
Million deer, right? I saw that commercial the other day. But, you know, I mean, if he did know that he's dead, then that was mean of him to not give her a chance. How would she know that was him? But if he didn't realize he was dead, well, maybe he was just doing what she said, as he said he was, but... You know, this is the zone, and sometimes it's a cruel place in the Twilight Zone, but I felt sorry for her. But I love this episode. It's not a classic, but it's pretty damn good, and I love watching Gladys Cooper. So I give it a 4 because it gives me goosebumps, and that's what I think the Twilight Zone is supposed to do. So over to you, my friend.
Okay. I might, unfortunately, be the pale water on this episode. Cause
yeah, I think you
again,
are.
Yeah, again, this is all talk and no action until the twist at the end of the episode. It very much felt like a tribute to Dial M for Murder, the black and white one with Barbara Stanwyck. I think it very much reminded me of that, and also the 54, I think, Dial M one with Ray Milland.
The New York Times called it tingling with excitement.
The Detroit News said it's the best crime play in years.
The London Daily Mail headlined, "A murder thriller with a difference."
The New York Daily Mirror wrote, "It holds your attention like a vice."
Where's the nearest police station?
What could you tell them?
I should simply tell them that you're trying to blackmail me into...
Into?
Murdering your wife.
Fantastic, isn't it? But you know he's right, don't you, Tony? You've worked it out to the smallest detail. And this man is to be your murder weapon for the perfect crime. And you, Margot, you've been living dangerously, too dangerously. A married woman with a two-party line to your affections. And Mark, ironic, isn't it, that in this design for death, you should be selected to be the perfect alibi for the murder of the woman you love.
Are you ever going to tell Tony about us?
I couldn't possibly tell him. Not now.
There is evidence, however, that he was blackmailing you.
Blackmail?
Yes, I'm afraid it's true, Tony. And you suggest that he came in by the window. And we know that he came in by that door.
But he can't have come in that way. That door was locked.
You could have let him in.
A girl is called in the middle of the night and there's a murder committed. But I agree, this episode is very creepy. It has a Twilight twinge, very much more than the one we're reviewing, which is the Jeopardy Room.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait
yes.
about that one. But unfortunately, I was bored to tears watching it.
Really? You were bored?
Yeah, it seemed like a mystery without the mystery, pretty much.
But you weren't creeped out by the phone calls, and you weren't, when you first saw this episode, you weren't wondering who this was?
Well, with the thing hanging over the, well, actually it was laying on top of his tombstone.
But you didn't find that out until close to the end. You didn't find that out till the end. I mean, you know, until that, these phone calls had to be, like, you have to think they were creepy.
I don't know. It could be a creepy breather.
Hello.
Hello.
Jack the Ripper. Yeah. Oh, man.
But it does remind me of an episode from Tales from the Dark Side called I forget the name of it, but it was about a writer who has a heart attack, and I guess his wife was getting a phone call, but she couldn't make out what the phone call was because this person on the other end was crying. But it's a call that is from the future that she gets in the past. So, and it pertains to...
I think it was called The Call. Don't quote me on that. Yeah, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, you know which one I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah.
I used to watch that show all the time.
Yeah, he had a son. He was watching a show, and I think what this writer had a TV show or something made out of one of his books or something, and he was taping it for his son or something. And I had to
watch
it. It
sounds familiar to me because I did watch most of those. Yeah.
But
Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I like Tales. I like Tales from Dark Side and Tales from the Crypt. I like some of the episodes they do. But unfortunately, I can only rate this a 1 out of 5.
Okay.
I felt Nothing in the Dark was a lot better.
Oh, that was an outstanding episode.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So, Bobby?
All right. A pretty good and pretty creepy story, which causes me to ask one question, which I am almost certain I asked after we did Nightmare 20,000 Feet and Living Doll. What the hell is it doing in season 5? You really should be careful of the company you keep. It could ruin your reputation. At least that's what my mother always told me. I gave this episode a 3 rating for good. I would have gone to a 4 if not for the fact, as has already been mentioned here, that it is so derivative of what we have seen in the past, a fact that is true of almost everything in season 5. And also, as has already been mentioned, it immediately reminds you of the season 2 episode Long Distance Call, where a slightly possessive grandmother dies and attempts to take her grandson with her. I gave that a 4 rating, as did Lynn. And frankly, as good as this is, I feel that one is better and far more creepy and threatening because the life of a child is at stake. In this, poor Elva Keen is being quite scared by a call coming from nowhere. But frankly, her life is not immediately threatened, except in her own mind. Still, though, it is scary to get calls like that. Personally, I don't even like it when our phone rings and nobody answers since they realize they dialed the wrong number, so I sure would not like to be the victim of this. A truly bravura performance by Gladys Cooper, also reminiscent of her first appearance in the series Nothing in the Dark, where Robert Redford showed up at the door to take her into eternity. For me, that was also a better and scarier story. And she was also in the hour-long episode Passage on the Lady Anne, where it seems that all of those elderly folks are either dead or about to be dead. I never was sure. She was really typecast in this series, always the old lady fearing for her life or headed for the end of it. Gladys Cooper, as Lynn has already said, was a phenomenal British actress, and she had a 6 or 7 decades long career. She was in everything. She was in feature films. She was on TV, she was on the stage, and she was even in a long-forgotten American TV series that ran for 1 year called The Rogues. She was 76 when this was filmed, and she lived to be 82. And her work here reminds me of the phenomenal work done by Agnes Moorehead in the all-time classic The Invaders. To me, anytime you can give a convincing performance, basically playing against yourself, without an actor to play off, another actor to play off of, that's something to admire. It is a good and memorable story. At the Internet Movie Database, there are 24 written reviews, all of them positive. Well, almost all of them. There was one not quite so positive, and I want to read it now because it shows just how easily a person can misunderstand this series, and especially Rod Serling's closing comments. This was posted just 2 years ago in 2012. The heading of the review reads, "An ugly exception, an unintentional prophecy from a decent series." And this person writes the following. Although the Twilight Zone likes to indulge in sermons, which often ride on broad, melodramatic flights of purple prose, at least it usually has the excuse of a humane heart and thoughtful mind, genuinely interested in the human condition and serious issues. Night Call, by contrast, is astonishing in its arrogance, cruelty, and pointlessness. The word stupid often serves as a put-down. In this case, it's merely another accurate adjective. Already stressed by a loud, fierce nighttime thunderstorm, the elderly and crippled Elba Keen is confused and frightened by persistent phone calls from a weird, mostly non-responsive caller. She finally screams at him to leave her alone. And might not any of us? Her reaction is entirely understandable. The calls sound very much like the work of a malicious prankster, even a dangerous stalker. They'll scare a woman in Elba's vulnerable position, especially. To today's viewers, the caller might also sound like a more sympathetic case, a mentally retarded person, but a woman of Elba's age back in that era would be less likely to understand this. Yet Night Call holds Elva's natural reaction against her, ultimately punishing her simply for not understanding something that no one could. The basic plot elements of her undoing, a gotcha matter of semantics taken too literally, are silly enough. They also tie into a backstory on which the Twilight Zone slams what may be its most childishly recent hammer of judgment, complete with misogynistic tinge, basically, never let your uppity woman get her way, gents, least of all, driving privileges. This is bad enough. But then Rod Serling's narration chimes in to actually celebrate her fate as right and proper, capped off with a cruelly literal metaphor about this paralyzed, largely bedridden woman making her bed and having to sleep in it. Serling, creating of a beloved, socially conscious series, has never sounded so smug and small-minded. I wonder if Serling was responsible for the judgmental ending, apparently a change from screenwriter Richard Matheson's short story. At the least, he should have known better than to narrate this text. He wasn't aware of his hypocrisy either. The narrator who claims the crippled woman deserved her sickbed died himself years later on the bed of an operating room at age 50 after a life with much overwork and heavy smoking on screen and off. Probably Serling deserved a better eulogy than the one he gives Elva Keen. That's the end of the review. These are my comments. I can only say this to the writer of this review. If you're looking for a feel-good ending where everything works out well, you better stick to the Brady Bunch or the Partridge Family, not the Twilight Zone. Case in point, Time Enough at Last, where poor Henry Bemis is left weeping with his broken glasses on the steps of the library. To quote Henry, "That's not fair, not fair at all." This incredibly heartbreaking ending makes that story unique. Henry was doomed to die from radiation poisoning, but even his final few days would be horrible. Shame on you, Rod Serling. Indeed, life is full of tragedies, and I did not feel that Rod Serling was being cruel or reveling in poor Elva's agony at the end. I'm afraid that some people, like this person who wrote this review, just don't get it. Lynn?
Yeah, I agree with you. They don't get it. I mean, I thought it was a sad ending, but, you know.
Yes, but
it's the Twilight Zone.
Rod Serling has done all the closing narrations, and to give this a bad rating simply because you felt that he was laughing at the end of it, well, you know, she acted like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Therefore, she can sit there and stew over now, and that's too bad. And that never occurred to me until I read that review.
Me,
I think it was really over the top. Robert, how do you feel about that review?
Well, you know, like everybody has their opinions on what they feel about certain things. But as I said, it just was boring to me, unfortunately. And maybe it was boring for Rod at the beginning because I noticed he didn't have no cigarette because, how, you know, he usually has a cigarette in his hand. He kept moving his finger around while he was talking during the narration there. So.
Yeah, but you didn't particularly like the episode, but not because of what he said at the end.
No. It just was very talkative and very slow for me. And I mean, yes, it was creepy, as I said. It like a part of the Twilight Zone fits in there. But I felt Nothing in the Dark was a much better episode than this one was.
I do, too.
That was an excellent episode. But, no, I didn't get the impression at all that Rod was reveling in her, you know, devastation. I mean, I think he was just saying, well,
the reviewer not only didn't like that, he didn't like that they changed the ending. Because, you know, in the original ending, the caller says, I'll be right over. So he's suggesting here that, you know, maybe there was a chance she was going to get something positive out of it. But they took it away from her and left her just laying there being miserable.
Or maybe she was going to die.
No?
To the person that wrote that review, I would have put, gee, you must be a prophet too. You said something about it being stupid? Look in the mirror, my friend.
Yeah.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more.
Exactly.
I was going to say maybe that ending was set like that because when he said, I'll be right over, maybe she was going to go with him to the afterlife. It could have been set up, but then they decided to change the ending to show, you know, well, you know what? You shouldn't have said what you said, so see where you're at now was pretty much, I think, what Rod was saying. But if there was a fault, I would agree with Lynn, it was his fault for not saying who he was in the first place.
Yeah.
How was she supposed to know?
How
was she supposed to guess that? Oh, it's Brian.
It was very frightening, sure. Rick, what do you think? Rick?
Hello.
Okay.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of an H.P. Lovecraft story. H.P. Lovecraft, sorry, I said B. called The Confessions of Robert Carter, where at the end, a guy is exploring a grave, and Carter's up on top of the grave, and there's a phone set up, and they're talking. And at the very end, though, he tries calling his friend and hears nothing. And then he finally hears, your friend's dead.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, this is what it, you know, this episode kind of reminds me of that story in a way. I was creeped out by it originally. Now it's, you know, now that I've seen it and it's, what, 40 years later, you know, it bores me now, but, you know, the original broadcast that I saw, I was scared, you know. Hell, anything would scare a 10-year-old kid seeing this. No, I liked it. Be quite honest with you, I like it better than Nothing in the Dark. Because I wasn't impressed by Redford's acting in Nothing in the Dark. I thought he was really wooden. He got better, of course, but
yeah, he was. That was one of his first roles. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I enjoyed it. I loved that. You saw the telephone wire over the grave. And
yeah, that was,
But then again, I like horror stuff anyway, so.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it gives you goosebumps.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if there were some zombies walking around, I might have been interested.
Throw in a few zombies in. Night of the Living Dead, yeah.
But, like you, I give it a 4.
Okay, great. Okay, so we have a 3, 2 4s, and a 1. And maybe
they're
Dave...
coming for you, Barbara. They're coming
and Felix...
for you.
And Felix gives us a 4. Felix is a thank you, Felix. He gives us a 4, too. Okay.
Oh,
so...
a neat thing, too. I got to meet George Romero at a thing they had here in Columbus, Ohio. It was during Halloween.
Who'd you meet?
George Romero.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's the one that wrote Night of the Living Dead and some of the other horror movies. And here at Studio 35, they have like a horror marathon every year. Well, not now. They moved it to Drexel. But he was an invited guest, and it was kind of cool. He came and signed autographs and talked about his movies. You know, a lot of his stuff was independent movies that he did. So
that's always nice.
Yeah, cool.
Well, maybe Dave will give his review later. Like, maybe he can just send it or something, because I'd like to hear what he has to say about this one, or he can give it on the next show if he'd like.
Yeah, we want to wish him also a belated happy birthday.
Yeah, I was really hoping he'd be here today. We'll get him yet. We'll get him on the next one. Okay, and speaking of the next one is going to be on Saturday, December 13th, it looks like, right?
Yep, it is.
Yeah, Saturday, December 13th.
The 29th, 2 weeks from today, it's 13th. Yep.
Right, Saturday, December 13th. And it's going to be from Agnes with Love, with Wally Cox. And
I think we're doing two that day, aren't we? I think we're doing one and the other. Just one?
No, I don't really know. I don't have my list in front of me.
No, we're doing two. We're doing two. We're doing that one. And
does that start with that?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
So we're doing that one and Spur of the Moment.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that one. So we're doing Spur of the Moment with Diana Hyland and from Agnes with Love with Wally Cox. So that'll be 2 weeks from now.
Well, either that show or the next one after that. Might throw in a little discussion on occurrence on Owl Creek, because that is kind of something to mention. Don't have to review it, but
didn't do a review, so we're not going to do a show.
No, we didn't. No, but I just wanted to ask about, and maybe we could mention, why was it put in there in the first place?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. All right, everybody. Well, good show, and I hope everybody is ready to finish off their Thanksgiving dinners and get stuffed again, and because we're finishing ours off tonight. And hope it gets a little warmer here.
What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this? Where's the turkey, Chuck? Don't you know anything about Thanksgiving dinners? Where's the mashed potatoes? Where's the cranberry sauce? Where's the pumpkin pie?
There you go, Lynn.
Good old peanuts, right? Gotta love it. I love Charles Schultz. Yeah. Well, I hope it warms up for everybody, because I'm really cold and Felix is really cold and we're all really cold. So everybody, have a great rest of the weekend, and I hope to see you all here in 2 weeks for two shows, or two episodes, I should say. Okay, so take care, everyone.
And remember, if you get a phone call, don't answer that call. It could be beyond the grave.
Hello. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Just can't.